And on the telephone with me, I have Herb Smith from Mutikins for 9/11 Truth. Herb, thanks for taking the time to join us this morning.
Hi, Pete. Thanks for having me.
And I would like to have you back again next week. We've got a half an hour to go today. And tell us what your most recent, interests, findings are with 9/11 Truth. Where has the search been leading you recently?
Well, as you know, I'm for the most part, at least when we've done interviews before and presentations, I've mainly concentrated on destruction of the World Trade Center buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But more recently, I've been looking into the whole issue of the plane crashes, or the alleged plane crashes at the World Trade Center buildings. And I guess one of the reasons I did that, originally when I was first watching it, I remember with my cousin, we were watching replays, and when you had that second plane strike the South Tower,
right?
I remember saying, boy, that plane just melted into the building. It didn't stay, and I didn't really think much of it. And my feeling at the time was, well, I guess it was going fast enough that it cut through the building. And I didn't, I didn't analyze it, but I guess that was my thought at the time. So it was just something that's always been in the back of my mind. And then even a few years later, you had the whole no planes, planes versus no planes. And I never really got into it that much at the time because, like I say, I concentrated on the destruction of the towers, and I knew I could prove that.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest, I wasn't too sure about at the time, so I sort of let it go for a while. But more recently, there's been more. Like, it seems like everything was centered around the towers, like the architects for 9/11 Truth, and Kevin Ryan, who I saw do a presentation in Chicago, was very good. Kevin Ryan, Stephen Jones, it all centered around the World Trade Center buildings.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by this point, I'd known things about Stephen Jones and his thermite and the fact that Stephen Jones dishonestly helped set back the coal fusion movement, which I don't know, we've talked about, I don't know how familiar
right.
you are with it or your listeners would be, but that was, coal fusion was like fusion at room temperature without fission, and it would have been pretty much it would have solved the world energy crisis. And it was maligned as being junk science, and there was nothing to it, and it was branded as a hoax. Well, it turns out the research is still alive. Part of why it was branded as a hoax was dishonest experiments by MIT and that sort of thing. And Stephen Jones was also one of them. Stephen Jones was simultaneously as when Pons and Fleischmann had done the original coal fusion work, and they were in Utah. Stephen Jones was in another. They were one college in Utah, I can't remember the name offhand, and Stephen Jones was another, and he was on the commission, Stephen Jones was, and so he knew about Pons and Fleischmann's research. So Jones had a different type of coal fusion, not as extreme or as promising as Pons and Fleischmann's coal fusion. Well, Jones said this coal fusion is not the answer to the energy shortage, and the press took that to be the same type of coal fusion as Pons and Fleischmann, and then it was branded, oh, it's never going to work, it's a hoax, that type of thing. So Stephen Jones had a hand in that. I'm just kind of going off the top of my head. I'm sure there's more to it.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned a book, The Rebirth of Coal Fusion, I think delves into it more. But I think that was deliberate. So there's Stephen Jones in the coal, and coal fusion helped derail coal fusion, and I think by then, a few years later after researching 9/11, I knew about that, and I believe Stephen Jones is doing the same thing to 9/11 research. So, again, I'm making a long story now to wrap this up. By this time I'd known the 9/11 movement at the top was a controlled movement. So when they're all telling me to go one way, I'm going to go another way.
Right.
So I sort of, although as much as important as the destruction is, they made it more how it happened, which I didn't agree with, and what gets lost is that it happened, that they were destroyed by explosives. So like I said, I started looking into other avenues, and I decided to give the whole idea of the plane crashes another look, or the alleged plane crashes.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a few problems, of course. According to the official theory, flights 11 and 175 struck the North and the South Towers. And I believe they were Boeing 757s or 767s. I think believe there's Boeing 767s. So, but there's a few problems. There's quite a few problems with the government's allegation, and much of the problems come from the government's own data, from their flight recorder, and it comes right from, you know, the official, the physics and some of the that they actually receive calls after they were supposedly crashed come right, you know, that comes right from the government. So their own data is at odds with their own theory.
Right.
So, well, there's a couple ways to, there's a couple, about three problems to look at with the plane theories, three or four at least.
Well, with the calls, they supposedly received calls from that plane, from people on the plane after it allegedly had hit the buildings.
Right. It's called, let me bring this up real quick for you if you got a second. Yeah, they received, I don't know if they weren't calls from the people that crashed, but it's called ACARS confirmed. They received messages, some of the alleged plane crash, like in Flight 175 and Flight 93, still received onboard messages after they had allegedly crashed. So 175 would have been the second plane that hit that, the one that hit the South Tower, and Flight 93 would have been the plane that allegedly crashed in Shanksville. They were still receiving messages, like communications, to the plane from, like, after they had allegedly crashed.
Oh, I see. So you mean the black
the
box
controllers? I believe the controllers or somebody were still in contact with the plane.
Okay.
So they were receiving messages, not sending them out, but receiving messages. And again, this is according to data released by the government. Now, I didn't get to mention, well, Andy Sr. and myself have a site called Uticans for 9/11 Truth.blogspot.com. I'll put up links to that. But there's, if someone wanted to find out this information, you can go to Pilots for 9/11 Truth. .org, and there they had received, you know, these guys are professional pilots, and they analyzed the data that was released by the government, much of it through the Freedom of Information Act. So they have an article called ACARS confirmed 9/11 aircraft airborne long after crash, United 175 in the vicinity of Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, PA, 20 minutes after it had allegedly crashed into the World Trade Center South Tower. And again, you also had a problem with Flight 93. So that's one problem. Again, that's the government's own data is at odds with their theory that Flight 175 struck the South Tower. Another problem you have with the plane crash theory, and it's really just theory because it's not really proven in any court of law, is the speeds of these alleged planes. Now, Flight 11, the speed was, this is according to U.S. government data, and the pilots for 9/11 Truth also discussed this in their article, Speeds Reported for World Trade Center Aircraft Analyzed, that they, Flight 11 would have been going at 440 miles per hour, which that alone is bordering, remember, we're talking about at sea level. The speeds you reach at sea level are slower than the speeds you're going to reach up 35,000 feet in the air because of the air gets denser down at sea level, and you have a stall speed, and you can't attain the same speeds as you can cruising up above the clouds.
Mm.
So 440 for Flight 11, according to the pilots for 9/11 Truth, 440 is just about on the edge of failure for the plane. It just can't reach that. It can't reach that speeds, and just structurally, it's very difficult to handle those speeds. Just as the structure would break up, the G forces would be too much. But so 440 for that first plane is just about the max.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 5 miles, or you could possibly make a case for reaching that, but would that have been controllable by an inexperienced pilot? Like, I'm not sure who the alleged offhand, I don't know who the alleged hijacker was, but as you know, the story was that these guys had learned how to fly planes on simulators, and just hitting a 200-foot-8 building and threading the needle and being able to hit your target is perhaps not impossible, but it's highly, highly improbable. And then you had it not only with the North Tower, but with also the South Tower. And the South Tower is even worse because, according to the government, it was going 540 miles an hour. And not only that, it took a turn. If you remember, it banked into the tower. This is just impossible. It's an impossible speed for the plane to hit. For the plane to fly, and it would have been uncontrollable at that speed to take a bank and a turn and we're talking a 767. We're not talking a fighter jet. So that's probably even more egregious than the first one, because the first one hit a little bit closer to straight. This one went faster in an impossible speed, and then banked and hit the tower also. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Pilots saying, even if it could handle that speed, which apparently it can't, this would be like someone who would never, they did an analogy in one of their, the pilots have released some films, and they did an analogy on one of their films about the plane crashes, or about the plane theory. And they had said it would be like someone who'd never driven a car to drive into a garage at like 100 miles an hour, into a tight-fitting garage at 100 miles an hour and not hit either side, or to drive through a garage, however they put it. So, I mean, this is just, it's preposterous that anyone could fly the plane at 540 miles an hour. And bank it and take a sharp turn and hit the tower. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous.
Herb, I got a question for you. How do you know if anyone mentions how likely it is to be able to do that by remote control? Let's say that the planes were being controlled remotely. Would it make it easier if someone was an expert that they could do it by remote?
Perhaps. I haven't. The problem, again, is that if you're talking Flight 175 that hit the South Tower, again, the structure, the plane couldn't. Well, I guess if you're talking a different type of plane.
I see. Because you're saying that the plane would break up.
It couldn't have been a United Airlines 175. It couldn't have been a Boeing 767.
Okay.
Even by remote, because, again, the speeds are too high to attain, and the turn would have made the plane apparently break apart. So structurally, the plane couldn't even handle that turn. Even if it could attain those speeds, if we were possibly talking like a hollowed out, modified 767, I don't believe that he could even hit. It could have attained those speeds even by remote control.
Mm-hmm.
But then you run into the problem of the physics. And that's where I think, and even the pilots don't quite go that far in that regard. although they talk about modified planes, but the problem is, if you take, again, when I mentioned that when I saw the 175 strike the South Tower, or allegedly 175 struck the South Tower, and how it melted into the building, the problem there, again, according to the government's own data, is that it completely went into the building, its own length of the building, at the same speed it went through air, at 540 miles an hour. And you can also see this in certain, there's certain videos, I believe the Evan Fairbanks video, where if you count the number of frames, you can see this plane approaching the building, and I believe it takes like 11 frames to cover its length in air. You can actually see it cover its length in air, and then you count the same number of frames that it disappears into the building, and it's the same number of frames, 11 frames. And again, the government's data says it took 0.25 seconds or whatever to completely enter the building, and if you did the math, it comes out to the same speed through the building, its own length through the building, as it did through air, which would mean that the steel and concrete building offered no more resistance than air, which is impossible. So even if it were remote control, and even if it were a modified plane, we still have the impossibility of it entering the building as it did through air. So now you're talking some of the same problems with the towers. You know, I mean, one of the things they allege is the towers were destroyed at free fall speed, which isn't quite true. It was slower than free fall, but still, you know, it couldn't have happened gravitationally. But now when we're talking a plane that went into the building like it went through air. Now, if that was the case, if it could somehow go right through the building like it did air, well, why did it stop? It would have just gone completely through the building. You know, in other words, it had gone through its length when it disappears, like it went through air. But then the last, so a plane, I believe, is like 140 something feet long, and the building was 208 feet wide. So the first 140 feet, the building offered no resistance. But then somehow the plane didn't make it through the building. Well, if it went through the first 150 feet or so, why didn't it go through the last 50 feet?
Right.
So, you know, you've got a problem there. So regardless of whether it was remote controlled or modified, it's just an impossible. What we're seeing is impossible. And another point about that, especially with the South Tower, is to remember, again, we talked about the banking. It struck at an angle. Now, you could punch a hole through a wall if you're punching it straight on. I mean, not that it's not going to offer resistance, but try to punch a hole through the wall at an angle. It's going to be much tougher. So not only did this thing supposedly just penetrate right like it did through air, but it also did at an angle. So, of course, you would have had rotational forces. You probably would have had one wing striking first. The plane probably would have started to. I mean, granted, you had the engines hanging down, which offered much stronger than the aluminum in the nose cones. But you're still probably one engine's going to hit. It's going to spin around. The tail probably would have just flown off into the street. It would have been a mess. It would have been a plane crash. But when you look at that South Tower strike, nothing about it indicates a plane crash. It just effortlessly just disappeared right into that building. So that's probably to me the speeds, of course, are important. The communication still after they crashed is important, but I think the physics, which, you know, can never violate physics, that sealed the deal for me that what we saw wasn't what we think we saw. Again, now that, of course, went into, you basically had two camps. You had the Stephen Jones camp, who they did a consent, they did their hearings, the Toronto hearings, where they seem to not even, you know, granted, I mean, Stephen Jones is a physicist, doesn't seem to see the physics violations here, but he sees them at the towers. So it seemed to me that you could have explosives in the buildings, but you could still have the 19 Arab hijacker scenario, and you could still have the war on terror, but you could also say, well, it was a rogue element that planted the build, you know, that knew these alleged attacks were coming and planted explosives in the buildings to help perpetuate the terror, but the official theory for the most part is still true, that they would, you know, we still had 19 Arabs hijacking planes and hitting their targets. So that's why I think these alleged plane crashes are so important, because if you realize a plane can't go through a building like it can through air, which I think is even easier to understand than Building 7 or the towers or, you know, that type of thing, then right there, right from its inception, the official theory falls apart, and now we know what they told us happened, we know what they said happened didn't happen, and we know the whole 19 Arab hijacker scenario is false.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I started looking at the planes. But again, so you had, but then the problem, and I believe it's definitely legitimate on the plane crash, the alleged plane crash physics violations, that's a fact. But on the other hand, you know that, but it became two camps again, just like on the towers, you had thermite versus, then you had Judy Woods directed energy weapons. Now you have, again, the Stephen Jones camps, just apparently 175 and 11 struck the towers, and then you had the other camp that said nothing hit the towers, that people didn't, you know, that whatever, that you had video fakery, and everything you see is a fake video of a real plane hitting the buildings.
I hadn't heard that one.
Oh, you haven't heard? Okay, that's which part haven't you heard?
The video fakery.
Video fakery. Right, that kind of went hand in hand with the no planes theory.
Mm-hmm.
So we could, next week, maybe we can discuss that a little bit more. But essentially what you have is, again, the important thing on 9/11, eventually you can offer theories as to what happened, but that seems to be fraught with straw man arguments. The important thing is to say what didn't happen, what you can prove didn't happen, because we don't really, you know, you do have the resources, you have the videos, you have the data, you have physics to where you can determine whether the official theory is true or not. That can be done. Just like if you take the Kennedy assassination. Well, you know we have what the magic bullet theory is. We know that's impossible. That doesn't tell you who did it, but that tells you Oswald wasn't the lone gun nut. So it's the same thing with 9/11, that you can say, okay, I know Building 7 fell at free fall speed in its own footprint. I know fire has never brought down a steel frame building. I can read the NIST report, which is the official theory for the collapse of Building 7 and the alleged collapse of I hate to use the word collapses because it was a destruction of the towers. And you can look at that, and you can look at their data, you can look at the film, and you can look at evidence that they haven't presented, and you could say, okay, does this make sense? Is what they're saying possible? Anybody can do that. To give you a theory on what happened is just going to be beyond probably, we don't have, that's what you do a real investigation for, that's where you have subpoena power, that's pretty much beyond the average person's capability. One of the things the defenders of the 9/11 theory will say, well, what happened? Well, that's one of the rules of disinformation. They expect you to solve the crime completely, which we don't have the resources. We don't have the power to subpoena records. NIST is the National Institute of Standards and Technology. I've mentioned this, I don't know if I've mentioned what they are. To me, I know what they are, but they're National Institute of Standards and Technology. They are the organization, they're the government body that produced the official reports on the collapse, on the destruction of the towers in Building 7, and some of the data on the speeds of the plane, but that also goes with the National Transportation Safety Board. But you can look at what they say, and you can determine whether or not they're true. But NIST also has all there's so many videos of the buildings and the aftermath, and the NIST will not release to the public. Now, had there been a trial, like a normal country would have a trial to prove their case, NIST under the Discovery Act, if you present your evidence, you have to also present it to the other side. So by not having a trial, that's one of the ways that they just, under, of course, the guise of national security, they don't release any data, any of the film. There's so many films and so many photographs that they won't release to the public. Now, those who have nothing to hide, hide nothing. As you and I, as citizens, we can't petition NIST to say, well, release all the data you have for your theory that the buildings collapsed gravitationally. So my point is we can determine what didn't happen. And we know one of the guys who I have a link to my website, he had always said, we know 9/11 more for what it is not than for what it is.
Right now on the website, you guys have a video up in the upper left-hand corner of the flash before the first impact. You want to say a little bit about that?
That's one. I had meant to mention that. It's more pronounced. You could see there's. I know Popular Mechanics addressed the flash on the second plane crash. The second plane crash that we see, or alleged crash that we see. They never even mentioned the first crash. Now, if you go to our website, utikinsfor911truth.blogspot.com, like you mentioned, in the left-hand corner, you see, now that's the first plane crash. That's from the Naudé Brothers film, and there's a very noticeable flash before it impacts the building. Now, that, again, if you're talking directed energy weapons, that appears to be some type of energy weapon from the plane into the building, and you can see, and not only can you see the flash, you can see the building explode outward. So it wasn't just a sunspot, or it can't be just a spark from the plane hitting the building, because it hasn't even hit the building yet.
Right.
So that's one that's rarely mentioned, but even by the no planers, the so-called no planers that say nothing hit the buildings, or nobody saw anything, they were mistaken, they don't even address that flash before the impact. And one of the a guy named Eric Salter, who's against the no planers, on the side that the alleged planes struck the buildings, that part is true. Well, he had done something on the no planers and why it's wrong, and it's funny how he described that as the flash upon impact, which is false. You can see it's clearly before impact. So again, that's another problem. That's something that, if that was Flight 11, that shouldn't be there. You shouldn't have some type of flash coming from the plane and hitting the building and exploding the building outward before this plane hits the building.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one that's rarely talked about by the so-called 9/11 truth movement, and as the adherence to, the controlled demolition crowd, only the controlled demolition crowd doesn't seem to see that. But likewise, neither do the no planers.
Well, and now who was the person responsible for taking this video?
That was from the Naudé Brothers film.
Any background?
It was also on Univision, I believe. I believe that was on Univision also, from the Not Dave Brothers film. So that person was Dave from 9/11 University or 9/11blimp.net, which we have linked to our website. So he put that up on his page, and we linked to that.
I see. But, I mean, he made the short. Was he responsible for the original video, Dave, or that was the Not Dave Brothers?
That's the Not Dave Brothers. That's the only. There is one surface later on much of the you know of a flight, alleged flight 90, flight 11 hitting the building. It's very far in the distance. It's hard to even see that. But the Not Dave Brothers film was that's the only shot of that close. That's just not, and that's a whole other thing as to, that was a miracle shot, and then it brings up to the question of whether they were put there to take that film, which would be another area of research.
Right.
Because that was, no one had seen that coming, and a lot of things had to go right for that shot to be taken. Remember, that was the first one. No one knew that was coming. The second one, you had people, obviously you had a tower burning, and people were looking at it, and then the second one comes, which, again, is another problem that people have with the no-planers, is that people were looking for it.
Right.
But the Not Dave Brothers film, that is one, that's the only one taken. Now, if I got 1 second to talk about that real quick.
Sure.
Is remember that twice President George W. Bush has said he saw the first plane hit the tower. Well, that film wasn't shown. Originally, that film that we see, the Not Dave Brothers film, didn't surface till, I believe, like a day later. So how could Bush have seen the first plane? You know, he's talking like he was watching TV, and he saw the first plane hit, and he said, geez, I thought that was a bad pilot.
Right.
Twice he said that. Well, that film hadn't even surfaced yet. So how could he have seen it? Was he privy to some, were they watching this, monitoring this? Had he seen something beforehand?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Congress has never asked him about this, or the report, or any reporter. But not only did he say it once, he said it twice.
Well, very compelling information, Herb, and I'd love to have you back again next week so we can get a little more in-depth on the topic.
Yeah, I'll make it to the studio for that one. And like I said, this was pretty quick, and I can bring up some more stuff, some more information next week, a little bit more thoroughly. This was pretty much off the cuff, as you know.
Yeah.
So I want to get that out there a little bit. We could definitely do more in depth next week.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate it, and you have a good afternoon.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.